Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin.
Hello, everybody. It's Kaylee, and I just hit my head on the, the headphones on the mic. How's it going, Devin?
It's going all right. How about yourself?
Well, I just hit the headphones on the mic, so...
Yeah, you're in the hot seat.
I know, I'm not used to it. But I'm here today with a retro recipe. It's been quite a while since I've done one of these.
Yeah, this is like a retro segment for Culinary Convo.
I kind of can't remember what I did last.
I'm trying to remember, too.
Was it the spaghetti?
Might be, yeah. I think the spaghetti with the two different sauces.
Oh, my gosh. That was a long time
ago. Yeah, that's been a bit.
I think I've just been feeling kind of uninspired / overwhelmed because there's so many different things out there from these old cookbooks. But then I look at a lot of the things and I'm like, I would never eat that.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like an infamous, like, Jell-O salad,
right,
or it has a bunch of mayonnaise, or,
yeah,
you know, something I don't want.
Yeah. It's like, just like the other seven recipes, add a whole stick of butter, and you're like, okay, yeah. No margarine, can't do that, huh?
No.
Yeah.
It's all in or nothing.
Right.
But I finally became inspired. Because I got a set of books that I have wanted for years, and I'll kind of go into, the history of it more here, maybe more than I have before with the other cookbooks, just because this set of books has fascinated me for so long, and I finally got all of them, and it was one of the best days ever, so...
It was a heck of a deal, folks.
It was, and I'll get into it, but I'm super, super excited about this. I made something, and we'll talk about it, and I guess I'll just get right into it. Are you ready, Devin?
I'm ready. Should I get my singing voice ready?
If you want.
Okay.
That's up to you. You're the guest.
Okay.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. Hold on. Welcome to Retro Recipe.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm not going to lie. Okay, so this segment is about the Culinary Arts Institute Cooking Magic Cookbook Binders. And so you're probably like, what? A binder? This isn't, you know, what you think it is. I'll get into it. I might even pull up a picture to show Devin. All right, so they are these very beautiful, like, red and white binders.
Yeah.
So one of them is like a red cover, and then it has gold font text on the front, and then it has like a white spine.
Yeah.
And then the second binder is kind of the inverted version of that. So it's white cover, still a gold font, red spine.
Duotone.
I really like them. They're super pretty.
They definitely look like something from the 50s or 60s. Yeah, would be that mid-century modern look.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they look really nice aesthetically. And they're not too big. I mean, they're thick, but they're not like a school binder size. It's like, I don't know, the size of a forearm or something. Anyway,
it's the size of like an instruction manual.
Of what?
Well, like a dishwasher or like an appliance. Because see, look, we have one on our desk right now, and it's...
Oh, you're talking about the individual book.
Right. No, the binder. Binder's about the size of like a hardback, like book.
Yeah.
Like a regular hardback.
So
but anyway.
I'll get into that. So there are two like sets of these binders, and they each have 12 little booklets that are themed. And so what Devin is saying is the little booklets are probably the size of like an appliance manual or whatever. Right. And then the whole little binder is like the size of a really long book.
Yeah.
So I became really interested in these cookbooks through one of my very favorite YouTube channels, which is Lacey Faye, the Vintage Girl Next Door.
Shout out.
I found her channel. It was basically very shortly after the pandemic started and we were all at home doing stuff. And I just got really inspired by like thrifting because I couldn't really do it at that time. And I was like, oh, I wonder what I could find out there. And I was looking up just random things. And there was a video, it was titled something like, "This woman lives like she's in the 50s. And I was like, what? So I watched it, and then I found her channel through that. And so basically her entire house, wardrobe, makeup, hair, things like that are pretty much straight out of mid-century America. But she is a very modern woman. And a phrase that she's mentioned before that I really like is that she enjoys vintage style, not vintage values.
Unlike the Supreme Court, am I right?
That's another podcast. And so anyway, I won't go on and on about her because, you know, that's a whole other thing. But there was one of her videos that I watched. She does like a little cooking series. So kind of similar to what I do, I guess. She finds recipes from vintage books and makes them. And so in one of the videos, she mentions these cooking magic binders that she found at an estate sale. She got each of them for $3 each. So 24 little cookbooks for $6 total. And I was like, wow, like that is an incredible deal. Like, I wonder what is in these binders. And I was just, when I was looking into it more, I was just super fascinated by all the different cuisines and the themes of each of the little 24 cookbooks. So there's one called The Cheese Cookbook. So it's just all about cheese. There's one called The Hungarian Cookbook. I've never had Hungarian food. Yeah. And so that might give me a good idea of what their food and cuisine is like. And so basically over the last couple of years or so, I've kind of kept my eye out for these binders because Etsy and eBay, they sell quite a few of the individual books, usually around like $10 each. And so if you're not wanting to get the whole, you know, set of 24 essentially, then you can buy the individual ones, like if you're not interested in all of them or you want a particular one. But you know, if you're trying to collect all 24, then that's gonna cost you $240 if they're all around $10 each. So, and on top of that, some are harder to find than others. There's an Italian cookbook that I've noticed is pretty hard to find. The Hungarian one, I think, is pretty hard to find. And there's like a French one, too. And so, you know, the harder it is to find something, the more expensive it is. So at a minimum, if you buy these individually, it could be around $240 at the very lowest. But, you know, with the more uncommon ones, it'll bump it up. So anyway, I was just really on the hunt for the whole set, not incomplete. Real deal. So I was scouring eBay, I don't know, about a month ago. And so I was looking for the actual binders versus the individual books. Because it's also a lot easier to store the binders versus all the little booklets all together. And I was just seeing how much people were selling these binders for. And a lot of people were selling them for at least $30 to $40 for one binder. And then $80 to $90 for both, for like two. And so anyway, so a lot of the binders that I was finding were incomplete and selling for that much. And I was like, I'm not about to spend almost $100 on something that's incomplete.
Yeah.
That's not my MO. And so I was stubborn, I was persistent, but I was starting to feel really discouraged because I'm like, I'm never going to be like Lacey Fay. I'm never going to find these complete for $6, let alone, you know, $20, $30. But when I was looking about a month ago, I finally found a listing on eBay, both binders, 24 cookbooks total, in really good condition, not just on the outside, but pretty much perfect on the inside. Like, all the little cookbooks are practically untouched. Got it for about $44. So, yeah. That is kind of spendy to me, but then I started justifying it in my head. Like, there's a lot of, like, hardback cookbooks right now that are, like, $30, $40.
Yeah.
And it's just one, like, I don't know, one cuisine, one thing. It's not 24 different themes and cuisines and things like that. So I feel like $44 was justifiable. And that included shipping. So
and the binders. Yeah. All the booklets.
Yeah, like basically how it was originally distributed, I got it for $44. So I was like, I can't let this go. So wasn't $6, but I was still pumped. Of course I had to get them. Nothing was going to bring me down, get in my way. So anyway, with all that said, I know I'm kind of like nerding out over these books, but I tried researching the history of the Culinary Arts Institute in Chicago, which was the company or organization, whatever you want to call it, that released these books. But it's like anything about this institute, the history of it just hasn't transferred over to the internet. There's like next to nothing about the Culinary Arts Institute. So I don't really know what happened. It's like most of the information is lost to time. But I was able to find something from a blog, and they have some more insight on this cookbook series, and so I want to get into that a little bit, and then after I'm done blabbing about that, I'll go into the retro recipe that I made, believe it or not, me, the non-cook, made, and Devin and I will talk about that. So, in 1954, the Culinary Arts Institute began a new series of pamphlets, starting at number 101. The old 101 series was still in print, and this person, the blog is fricktech.com/CAI, FRIKTECH, fricktech? Mm-hmm. Is that? Okay.
Yeah.
They saw both sets of early 1950s reprints, and then they have also seen a 1957 issue. That's the series I have, is the 1957 issue. I've looked at all the little, like, copyright dates or whatever. And so they say that this mid-50s series appears to be largely new, so not reprinted from former sources. They call it the 50s series to distinguish it from earlier series of pamphlets. And so there are 24 members of the 50s series as follows. So 101 is Quick Dishes for the Woman in a Hurry.
Thank God.
I know. A little outdated. Within this booklet, 332 recipes. And then the blogger has a note of reissued from the earlier number 122 pamphlet. Number 102 is the Casserole Cookbook with 175 recipes.
And just to like throw this in there, hate to interrupt you, but
that's okay.
Like these, like I said, the pamphlets, the I call them pamphlets, but like,
yeah,
the Quick Dishes for like the Woman in a Hurry. It like I said, it's about the size of like an instruction manual for like a washer or dryer, that kind of thing. And it has, what was that again, 175?
This one has the
332.
Yeah.
So
332 recipes in 30 minutes or less is what the title or the cover has.
And so the only reason that's like crazy to me, which I know some of the recipes are like two things you mix it together.
Yeah, it's like a sauce or whatever.
But kind of like what you mentioned earlier, I mean, I have cookbooks that I absolutely adore that I paid anywhere between 30 to 40, and I'm lucky to get like 60, 70 recipes, and that includes quick ones. I mean, that's like them saying, oh, make this quick sauce, and then this goes with my crazy grilled whatever.
Yeah.
And so I find it absolutely crazy, whether it was Miss Lacey Fay getting, you know, $6 for all of these, or for us paying only the 40 whatever, and one booklet has 300 and some odd recipes, let alone the rest of them.
Well, and like I said, these typically sell around $10 each.
Yeah, and which makes sense.
And like, yeah, so even then, for 332 recipes, isn't bad if you're just wanting to get particular ones. But if you want the whole shebang, then don't pay $10 for each.
Yeah.
So yeah, 101 Quick Dishes for the Woman in a Hurry, 102 The Casserole Cookbook, 103 is The French Cookbook with 141.
Wee.
One of my favorites, 104, The Chocolate Cookbook with 218 recipes. It's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
I loved it. 105 is The Lunchbox Cookbook with 336 recipes. So this beats the Quick Dishes by four. Number 106 is The Italian Cookbook. 107 is Brunch, Breakfast, and Morning Coffee.
Mm.
108, The Ground Meat Cookbook.
That is the 50s to me.
Yeah.
In a nutshell. Is just, hey, do you have ground beef, lamb, chicken, turkey? Like any ground meat. And then you throw it in Jello with a, like little cherry tomatoes. And it's done. That's dinner.
And then you put like peach in it.
Right.
You're like, this is a whole meal.
Add maraschino cherries and, you know.
Put lettuce.
Yeah. Bottom. Gerald gets home.
Yeah.
I just imagine Gerald Ford, the ex-president. I just imagine him go, hey, honey, I made it back from the Ford plant. And she's like, I made a ground tuna Jello cherry mold. And it's just like this. Yeah. I just imagine that. But that's the thing. That's why getting these cookbooks is so important, is because I think the internet, TV, all that stuff, it does put that in your head. But then as you dig through these, you realize like that was like a tiny segment of 50s food.
Oh, yeah.
That was like really small. It just was popular because it was a new type of cooking, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of like microwaves and stuff like that. So
yeah, like canned goods, microwaves, ovens.
Yeah.
You know, those basically trying to find easy ways to make stuff in those tools or whatever. But yeah, and I think back then too, they had a lot of butchers.
Yeah.
A lot more easily accessible butchers. So it kind of makes sense that they'd have a whole book on ground meat.
Yeah.
Number 109 is Elegant Desserts. 110 is The Creole Cookbook.
Oh, yeah.
It was originally entitled The New Orleans Cookbook in 1954. 111 is Dishes Children Love. I will just say, when I looked through it, it's pretty basic stuff.
Yeah.
I
wonder if you tried to make an updated version, how different it would be.
A lot more chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And like corn dogs.
Weird breaded stuff. That's like pretty much what modern kids.
Mac and cheese balls.
Yeah. Which this, I'll admit, this is a small aside, but like, that's why when I watch those kid competition cooking shows, there's just something about it that is off to me, because it's like most kids are not like this. Like, they don't, it's not that they're good at cooking and that's weird. Like, that's like impressive.
Yeah, that's
but
cool.
When they're, yeah, they, like, they will openly say, like, I'm going to make a caviar bunt tuna roll, but I hate fish. And you're just like, then why are you making this, Thomas?
Yeah.
Like, stop it.
It's like, I haven't had caviar and I'm about to turn 27.
Yeah.
So like, these kids have had all these fancy things and it's right. like, I feel like I'm behind.
Yeah. Like, half of them will cook with some type of like cooking wine or something. Yeah. And I'm just like, kid, like, you don't have to impress anybody. Like, why did your mom force you to do this? Like, I, you know, it's yeah.
It is interesting. And then the final book in the first binder is 112, The Gourmet Foods Cookbook. And so then in the second binder, we have number 113, The Scandinavian Cookbook. I haven't looked too much through the second binder just yet. I've been meaning to, but I just haven't. There's lots of like pickled fish.
Oh yeah.
As you can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 114 is The Hungarian Cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say 114?
Yeah.
Okay, good. 115 is Entertaining 6 or 8. So if you're having 6 people, you have some stuff. But if you have 8,
yeah,
you have to change it up.
Yeah.
Number 116, probably going to be Devin's favorite, is The Cheese Cookbook. 117 is Cooling Dishes for Hot Weather.
Man, Pacific Northwest, everybody needs to read that book because none of y'all got AC out here. And so...
We do.
I mean, no, you don't. We don't have centralized...
We do.
No, we don't have central AC.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Yeah. We have a unit that's like... The
yeah,
whole
it's
time
pretty loud.
It's on. Yeah.
And it's only in the living room.
Right.
So it's like when I try to go to sleep, we just can't.
Yeah. Central AC, as much as it's like kind of bad for the planet and stuff, I wish it were out here. Otherwise, everybody needs to have that little cookbook.
Yeah. Got to make like gazpacho or whatever.
I don't know how many times my mom's been like, I want pizza, but I'm not going to turn on the oven.
Right.
And then I see her go outside and she turns on the grill.
In like 85 degree weather.
Right. Yeah. And she starts grilling pizza. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Number 118 is The New England Cookbook. 119, Sunday Night Suppers. Because when I was glimpsing through that one a little bit, it was basically like, Sunday's supposed to be your easy day. So incorporate a lot of leftovers and, you know, stuff like that because everybody's at home and blah, blah, blah.
That's a lie. If you're in the Midwest or the South, Sunday was the dinner that unfairly, it was like the big night. Mm-hmm. Sunday dinner because you went to church.
After
you got out of church, mom or grandma or whoever, it was like, I gotta make fried chicken and steak and all this stuff. And it was like, yeah, it was a big thing. Sunday dinners. I mean, my mom to this day, Sunday dinner, it's kind of like what you mentioned. It's either something that's thrown together with whatever Friday and Saturday was, or it's like a show.
Yeah.
I just sit at the dinner table. I look in the kitchen and I'm like, oh, mother has lifted the pot roast. She is flipping it to the... Oh, landed on the other side. Congratulations. Ooh, good sear. Good sear. Yeah.
I hate Sundays.
Amen.
I know. See, I was afraid to say that because I'm like, everyone hates Sundays.
If you're working age, you don't like Sundays.
No.
I mean, come on.
Unless, you know, you have a different schedule, but...
Yeah. Even kids hate Sundays.
Yeah, because they're like, I gotta go to school.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, 120, The German and, Viennese?
Yeah.
Viennese?
Yeah.
Like Vienna.
Yeah, like Vienna.
Austria.
Viennese.
I don't know how to say anything. 121, Cooking with Sour Cream and Buttermilk.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I haven't really looked through that one, but I need to because I just need to see like how calorie dense all that stuff's going to be.
Yeah.
122 is the Southern and Southwestern cookbook.
That's interesting.
So they don't get separate ones. They get mixed up together.
And those are two way different cuisines.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
123, tempting low-calorie recipes.
Shut up.
And then...
Tempting low-calorie.
I haven't looked through that one, but in other ones I've seen where they're like, low-calorie, there's cottage cheese, and I want to, like... I can't.
I love cottage cheese.
No.
But at the same time, in my mind, it doesn't make sense that cottage cheese would be healthy. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's cheese.
I got to move on. I'm like tearing up, like thinking about this. All right. Last one is 124, which is the holiday cookbook. So, yeah, that was long-winded, but it just goes to show you like how diverse all of these are.
Each one is like over 100 recipes at least.
Yeah, I think the smallest one, recipe-wise, because I know I kind of stopped saying the recipes, recipe amounts, I think it's the entertaining 6 or 8, which has 143, which is still a lot.
Yeah.
Or no, I'm sorry. It's the French cookbook, which has 141, which is a lot.
Yeah.
So... And the blogger from fricktech.com continues, as with the earlier Series 1, the 50s series was released in two sets of 12 books dating from 1954 to 1956. The first 12 were collected into a binder, then all 24 were sold in a boxed set with two binders as Cooking Magic. Unlike previous series, the dates on reissues of the 50s series are generally reliable. If a copy states that it was made in 1955, then it was. And then the entire set was reissued into the 70s with Cooking Magic series prominent on the new covers. The latest issue the blogger has seen is from 1975. I've never seen it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't seen any pictures with it.
I've only ever seen what I was able to buy. And so, yeah, that's just kind of everything I was able to find about these. But like I said, it's almost like this Culinary Arts Institute just, I don't know when it ended. I don't know, like, why. I can't figure it out. I can't find it out. There's nothing, next to nothing online about it.
And anybody who's those... heavy metal, like, you know, culinary heads. I thought when you first were talking about these books, I thought it was Culinary Institute of America or CIA, which is like the predominant culinary school.
That's still around.
Right. And they're throughout the United States, highly recommended, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But whenever you said Culinary Arts Institute, I just thought like, well, wait a minute, was that a magazine? Like, I started, like, I immediately started thinking, like, yeah, if it was connected with CIA in any way, I would think they would probably rave about this history.
Right.
Of, yeah, we had these cookbooks, 24 of them, and it was...
Yeah, I think they're both separate things.
Right.
Like I said, I just couldn't find out anything, not even on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting what I was able to find out, though, what I just shared. All right, so we're done geeking out, or I'm done geeking out over the little history that I could find about these books, and we're going to segue into the retro recipe that I made all by myself.
Yeah.
I know. You can stop clapping. I understand. So I was flipping through at least the first binder, so the first 12 books, and a lot of things sounded good, but I was like, I want something that very intermediate cooking level me, you know, it'd be hard for me to mess up. That wouldn't require like too much time or effort or whatever. I just want to test it out and see how it goes. So that led me to book 101, which is Quick Dishes for the Woman in a Hurry.
She was looking around. She was in a hurry.
I wouldn't say I was in a hurry because it was a Sunday morning. But, you know, like I said, I didn't want to spend like all day making something.
I wanted just something that you cooked that I didn't, because I love it when people cook for me.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
But no, on a serious note, I agreed with you whenever you started looking that it was like, I don't want anything that's like super fancy that they want all these tech, because it's one of those things where some of the older cookbooks that I have, even they get way too like long-winded, so much technique and dishes and stuff, because it was
people had more time to focus.
Totally. And it was like stay-at-home moms every now and again, which they had a lot of stuff to do. I don't want to minimize that, but you had a whole day to like do some prep, well, then cooking, other chores, then prep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cooking was a priority.
Totally.
For a housewife.
And and plus I think everybody can agree that most cookbooks, whether it's from a fancy chef or it's like Betty Crocker, if you can find a recipe that you want to make at least once a month, if not once a week, that's like hitting a home run. Mm-hmm. That it's amazing when you find a great recipe. And so most of the time they're basic. Mm-hmm. They're not very extensive.
So in this book 101, 332 recipes in 30 minutes or less, I found buttermilk waffles. Page 16. And just a side note, waffles are better than pancakes. I will fight you.
She's a liar.
I'm not a liar. They are better.
They're not. I don't know how to put this. They both have amazing qualities.
Sure.
I think me and Joel
are better.
Me and Joel talked about this last time. Waffles, you have to have a specific utensil to make it. A pancake, I can make a pancake on anything, a griddle, a pan, a flat top, a shield.
I don't give a flying hoot. Waffles have pockets.
They have pockets.
So you put the peanut butter in there, you put the maple syrup in there, you put whatever in there, and it stays in the little pockets, and then you cut into it, and it oozes out, and then you can, you know, soak it up some more, and it's incredible.
But the pancakes just absorb it.
Well, and you know what? No, I don't agree. I don't agree that they're better. So anyway, in my opinion, waffles are better. So on page 16, I found buttermilk waffles. And I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds so good.
Yeah.
Because we don't really have like waffles or pancakes too often.
If we do, it's your typical Bisquick, you know?
Right, right.
Which isn't
Bisquick.
Bad.
No, it's not bad. And maybe we can talk about that a little, but these were definitely different than what we normally have.
Mm-hmm.
So here is the base recipe. There's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 7 variations of these waffles, but I'm like, I'm just going to go simple. So you'll heat the waffle maker while preparing the waffle batter.
Okay, dear.
That hasn't changed.
I'm a woman on the go.
Yeah. I don't think that has changed in the last, like, what, 60 years or whatever.
No.
Melt and set aside to cool 1/2 cup butter or margarine. I went all out. I did butter.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't know, 1/2 cup is a stick. Sift together into a large bowl and set aside 2 cups of sifted flour, 1 tablespoon sugar, 2 teaspoons baking powder, 1 teaspoon baking soda, and 1/2 teaspoon salt. And then once you get all that together, beat until thick and lemon colored, 3 egg yolks.
That's an odd description.
I know, lemon colored. not like yellow or... No, has to be lemon.
Right. A light tan. No, that's lemon colored.
Yeah. And then you add gradually the melted butter or margarine and 2 cups buttermilk. I'll just say when I was mixing this all together, you know, buttermilk is sour.
Mm-hmm.
So I really did not like the smell while I was making this. And so then you continue to beat all of that together until well blended. Add liquid mixture all at one time to the dry ingredients. Mix only until batter is smooth. So you don't want to over
mix under it. Or over.
Yeah. Under or over, yes.
Yeah.
And then beat until rounded peaks are formed with 3 egg whites. So you got to do the little like separation of.
Yeah.
I want one of those little things I see online where it's like a little.
It's like a pig snout or it's like a.
No, isn't it like a chicken?
Yeah, there's chicken.
And it has its mouth open and right. then the yolk comes out.
Yeah. Basically, you squeeze it and then you let go of it and it'll suck up the yolk.
Yeah.
And then if you push out, it pushes out the yolk.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
I want one of those.
Yeah.
You
can do it with a water bottle. Plastic water bottle. Yeah.
I've seen that. Yeah. Spread the beaten egg whites over the batter and then gently fold together. And it tells you how to do that on page 5. Because at the very beginning of these books, they have like a cute little introduction. So the quick dishes one. This cookbook has been written for the working woman, busy with career and apartment. The homemaker whose days filled with community, club, home, and family activities. The hostess whose guests sometimes arrive without notice. I don't know how happy I would be about that.
Especially for buttermilk biscuit morning.
Yeah.
Or waffle, sorry.
Sorry, I know I kind of diverted there. But then the next pages after that little intro, it has like tips of what to do, you know, how to preheat your oven, how to beat whole eggs, you know, what like particular chocolate you need, or you know, how do you boil something. Unless the temperature is automatically shown on your waffle maker, test the heat by dropping a few drops water on baker.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weird sentence. I didn't do that because we have a pretty cool waffle maker. And it just beeps when it's like, it's hot.
Yeah, it yells at you.
It is hot enough for baking when drops of water, quote unquote, sputter on surface. Just in case you didn't know. Pour batter into center of waffle maker. Baker. Sorry. Waffle baker?
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah. Back in the 50s, they used to have little tiny gnomes that lived in waffle makers, and they were called waffle bakers. And you drop the water not only to test the heat, but to give them hydration.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
That's cute.
Yeah, little waffle bakers. Yeah.
Yeah. That definitely happened.
Yeah. They live in Scotland now, actually.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah. The lineage is still going.
Yeah, and New Zealand. Whenever you see those little fairy houses that they put.
Oh, like, that's where they live.
That's where they live, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, little bakers.
It's wise to experiment to find out the exact amount of batter your waffle baker will hold. Use that same measurement, spoonfuls or cupfuls, in future waffle baking. I just pour it from the bowl.
Mm.
And then if there's too much, then, you know, it gets a little messy. But that's why we put paper towels under our waffle makers.
Any overflow.
Yeah.
It'll get it.
Yeah. I don't have time to have exact same measurements.
Yeah.
This is not very quick dish.
Yeah. That's why waffle bakers are really mad at the paper towel industry. Because that's what the bakers were there for, you know, to organize the batter, to make sure it didn't overflow. And then paper towels came out, all their jobs gone.
Oh, that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Poor little buddies.
Nobody to save their jobs, huh? Yeah.
No robots can. Okay. I don't know what I'm doing right now. Like tangling up wires. I'm not a professional, FYI. Lower cover and allow waffle to bake according to manufacturer's directions or until steaming stops. And they say it's 45 minutes. Our thing beeps. So that's pretty
Which
nice.
Which I want to point out. Whether it's Bisquick, homemade mix, whatever, waiting until it stops steaming.
I don't think that.
That doesn't exist. I mean, if you wait until it stops steaming, you're practically
it's
burning.
It's probably burnt,
yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, my gosh. Like, I don't know how many times I've tried to listen to that rule, and then I'm like, there's still quite a bit of steam coming.
Right.
Like, what is going on here? And then, yeah. So I don't know if it's like particular models of waffle makers were just better at sealing the outside edges. Mm. And that's why steam didn't come out, you know, as much.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah.
Do not raise cover during baking period. Don't do it.
I could only imagine. Oh, man.
Lift cover and loosen waffle with the fork.
Yeah.
Serve immediately with butter or margarine. Don't forget, there's 8 tablespoons of butter in here, as well as 2 cups of buttermilk. But put more butter or margarine on it. And warm maple syrup, which is spelled S-I-R-U-P.
Syrup.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting as I was looking through this. I'm like, they called it, like, sir up.
Yeah. That was our cat. He opened a door.
It was kind of scary.
I think he's like, going to the bathroom. Sorry about that.
Okay, so that was the recipe for buttermilk waffles. Devin, I will open it up to you to talk about your experience, and we can chat.
Wonderful experience. I got to sit in a chair, and I just waited until it was done, and I got to hear like expletives and all sorts of things from the kitchen as this was happening, and I got to kind of do the whole, like, you raise your head up a little bit, and you're like, you need any assistance, dear? And she's like, no! I'm like, okay, all right. And not really. I mean, it wasn't as bad as some other stuff that I think you've made before.
No,
like,
it's,
in terms of difficulty, I should say.
It's pretty straightforward.
I will say, though, after you reading it and also me experiencing the sit-down experience, what are they talking about? Quick dishes for the woman on the go. This is not a quick dish.
No, it's not.
Like, I mean, honestly, Bisquick is like a million times faster than this, which I don't think Bisquick might have been around. I don't know. It might have been around.
To me, this was
then,
not 30 minutes or less.
No. I mean, you'd have to be hustling.
It was probably
to
like
get
45.
Yeah. I mean,
altogether.
Right. You'd have to be hustling. Like, literally, as you were reading that, I just imagine me, like, as a young kid or teenager, and my mom, like, just reaching in the fridge, throwing a thing of butter in a, you know, measuring cup, slamming the microwave, and just, you know, and not that she was, like, angry about making waffles, but it's just like,
go, go, go.
I know, yeah. You're just trying to keep everything going, and they're like, yeah, just heat up your little waffle maker while you sift your flour and your buttermilk. Make sure you got your melted butter. Then make sure.
Particular, yeah. You have to make sure they're all the same measurement. Yeah.
Oh, have you started the egg whites? Make sure you fold them. It's like, oh my gosh. Like, are you kidding me? Like, no, I will just do the 2 cups of Bisquick, an egg and some oil and milk. I'm done.
Right.
Like, but no, I mean, all I have to say about the waffles themselves, crispiness wise, they were not as crispy.
No.
As regular waffles. But the texture on the inside felt fluffier in a way.
Yes.
Way fluffier.
Yeah.
And the flavor, I enjoyed the flavor way more than Bisquick. But
it's Bisquick comes off sweeter.
It does.
Like more vanilla-y.
And it's a little drier. It's not as fluffy moist. It's kind of fluffy dry, and then the syrup takes over the moisture.
Yeah. And then these.
Yeah.
Like neutral?
Yeah. It's pretty middle of the road.
It's not a good word, but it's like we were talking about after we ate these. It's like these would be the perfect waffles for chicken and waffles.
Yes.
Because you don't have sweetness like fighting with, you know, the syrup or whatever that you have with chicken and waffles. It's just like a basic platform. Oh, Biscuit wants to talk about waffles.
Hi Biscuit.
Yeah. Oh, Biscuit and
Biscuit's
waffles.
Like, biscuits are better than waffles.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Yeah, especially Popeye's biscuit.
Oh, yeah.
The super dry, but super good.
But no, I mean, the thing that I kept thinking, the tablespoon, or was it a teaspoon of salt?
I think it was half a teaspoon.
Half a teaspoon, yeah. That actually does set it off from regular waffles in terms of it has that savory quality. And then the buttermilk adding just a tinge of sourness that isn't heavy-handed, it does. It has a more savory quality, and mm-hmm. so it's really good. The other thing I liked about it was the outside texture, although it wasn't as crispy, you had handed me the plate after taking them out, and you added, I think, a little bit of margarine. I can't remember.
No, I just added maple syrup.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I put a whole stick of butter in this. I don't think it needs any more.
Yeah. But I could still hear, like, the top of the waffle kind of, like, sizzling a little bit.
Oh.
And at first I thought, uh-oh, she undercooked these. But it wasn't. It wasn't undercooked.
Wow, you don't even have faith in me.
No, I've never heard that on a regular waffle. I just haven't. Oh, Biscuit, he's headbutting the microphones.
He really wants to talk about waffles.
I think he needs to calm down. He's already gone to the bathroom. We're sorry, everyone. He's so embarrassing us.
This is not a full-time job.
Yeah.
Yeah, what else do you think about these? Like, how would you rate them?
I think that these waffles, out of 10, if I had to rank it, it would be an 8.75.
Wow.
Pretty high.
Yeah.
Like I said, they were different than the Bisquick that we normally have. They're good savory or sweet. So, like, my regular Bisquick waffles, I'd probably give those, like, a good, like, I don't know, 6.75, 7. Mm. And these were an 8.75 because they had that little je ne sais quoi. They just had that little bit of extra effort. And plus, I got to sit the whole time.
That's what I enjoy.
Huge benefit. Yeah. But no, I mean, these had a really great quality to them. And, you know, the fluffiness reminded me of pancakes. Enjoying the pancakes.
There you go.
But yeah.
That's how you bridge both worlds.
Right. Yeah. What would be your ranking?
Mine would be 9.25 out of 10.
Because
I love these. Yeah. They remind me of the waffles I had growing up where they're like thicker and more fluffy.
Yeah.
I've never really cared for like the thin, crispy, like hotel waffle maker
waffles. Waffle House waffle.
Well, I've never been.
Yeah.
I don't care for those as much as I care for fluffier waffles. So these, I was super happy they came out that way. And I think, you know, these would be really good to, you know, put like chocolate chips in it or peanut butter or bananas, strawberries, you know, whatever types of toppings. I think that because these have a more neutral a flavor versus, you know, more vanilla-y and all of that, that you can pretty much add whatever toppings you want. You can add whatever you want to the batter. And I think that it would all work pretty well with these.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned earlier, this did not take 30 minutes or less. It was probably about 45 altogether with like, you know, making
taking
the
everything
batter.
Out.
Yeah, yeah. And cooking all of it and all of that. But, you know, I wouldn't make this all the time. But I think I would definitely make these once in a while, at least like once every couple months or something. Like if you have people over, if you're doing like a brunch thing, these would be super good for that.
I will say this, there is a hack for waffle or pancake batter, and I'm trying to remember whether it goes in the fridge or the freezer, but basically you like quadruple the batch and then you can put it in like a tea container or like a Ziploc bag. I can't remember. But basically, it's like you have ready-made waffle
batter.
You can
freeze it?
Like I said, don't quote me on this. I don't know if it's fridge or freezer, but it's like you can make multiple batches, and then that way you don't have to like remake your batter each time.
Oh.
Yeah. I want to say there's one. I think it might be both. I think there's one where you can put it in a large bowl or container, like a tea container, you know, in your fridge, and it's like you have waffles the whole weekend, right?
Oh.
And then, like, you know, the other one in the freezer, it's like they put it in Ziploc bags, I think, and then you de-thaw them, like, Friday night, and it's ready, you know, Saturday morning. And but like I said, don't quote me on that. I just remember seeing a hack one time that made it to where you didn't have to mix the batter when you haven't had coffee and you're just like dog tired.
Yeah, but yeah. Is it one of those hacks where it's like, oh, that could work. Oh, that looks awesome. And then you actually try it.
It's just awful. It's just water. It's just this tan lemon colored water. It's like, all your guests are like, do you have lemonade in there? And it's like, no, that's batter. That's batter.
Why would you put lemonade in bags, Gerald?
Yeah. Gerald, why is the lemonade in the bags?
Leave my brunch party now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you probably couldn't add stuff either, like fruit.
No.
It's like strawberry waffles, and then you pull it out of the freezer, and you're just, that would be bad.
Anyway, I really enjoyed these. They were super, super, super good. I would definitely make them once in a while, not all the time. But they'd be good for, like, holidays, too.
Yeah.
People are big on, like, making special breakfasts or whatever for holidays, and... it's a good base recipe. I counted there are about 7 variations that they include. So you could make them sweet milk waffles.
Mm.
So instead of baking soda, you increase the baking powder amount. And then instead of buttermilk, you just use milk. You can have cheese waffles. So you put cheddar cheese in them.
Why isn't that in the cheese cookbook?
It might be. I don't know. You can do chocolate drop waffles, poppy seed, spice, which is like cinnamon and nutmeg and molasses.
Yeah.
Main dish waffles. You put ham in it.
Yeah.
See, like I said, you can put anything you want.
And see, I will say, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like the waffles, the texture, the way that they're cooked, or the way that they look, they reminded me of waffles you might get at a restaurant that have like powdered sugar on it.
Oh, yeah.
And then you mentioned those like spice ones. That is a Christmas waffle. If you add the nutmeg.
Like
and
a
the,
fall or winter.
Yeah, and you got the powdered sugar and maple
syrup.
Sorry,
I'm trying really hard not to laugh right now, but on this main dish waffle thing. You know, you can put ham in it, and it's like, oh, okay, a lot of people like that. Or serve a creamed vegetable, meat, fish, or poultry mixture on waffles. Like, do they mean, you know, just creamed vegetables, or are they saying, like, creamed meat?
No, I think they mean creamed vegetables, and then you put a meat on top of it.
In addition.
Yeah,
okay,
which is still not.
I was like, what's creamed meat?
Who wants a cream spinach with beef or with chicken on top of that waffle?
Yeah, I'm good.
And
then the last one they have is dessert waffles. So you put ice cream on it, or you can make the waffle like a shortcake. So you put like berries or peach and then add whipped cream on it. So that sounds really good. I loved these. They were super, super good. And if you couldn't tell earlier, I am so happy that I have all these little cookbooks now. I'll continuously like reference them. You know, I'm like, oh, I want an elegant dessert. I can go to my elegant dessert cookbook.
Yeah.
I'm in the mood for a casserole. There's a casserole cookbook. Cheese. I really want cheese, so I'll go my cheese.
I need to
cookbook.
Get a Hungarian tickle of food, and then it's like, you can get some Hungarian.
Do I want to cook with sour cream today? Oh, well, I have a sour cream and buttermilk cookbook. So, you know, whatever you're feeling, there's got to be something that you like. And so, I would highly recommend trying to find the full binders if you can. Don't spend $90, though. That's way too much. But if you can find a good deal, or if you even just want the, you know, specific ones, you're like, I would want the chocolate cookbook, but I really don't care about the low-calorie one, then it's like, just find the chocolate one online, and you can look through and, the books have really cute little, like, drawings and animations and... lots of helpful tips and recipes and all of that. So yeah, I can't rave enough about these. I'm so happy that I was able to find the set that I found and that I can, you know, use them and hopefully pass them down to future generations and spread the wealth of Culinary Arts Institute of Chicago.
Exactly. I think you should be using these at least 2 to 3 times a week, making meals for the person, people you live with, like me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if you pass them down, then they can make them for me. Be really great.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd like that. Yeah, we'll talk about that off mic. But yeah, that was retro recipe for this time. I don't know what I'm gonna do next. It really just kind of depends what interests me, what, you know, catches my eye, and like if I'm actually feeling up to making something.
Kind of like these rows of corn or the Brussels sprouts next to it.
Because as you know, Devin is the cook in this household. And so he kind of takes lead on that. But, you know, it is kind of fun for me to do it once in a while and, you know, see what works, what doesn't.
Yeah.
And Devin, do you have any final thoughts or opinions or anything?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing that I find interesting with these little, you know, cookbooks and everything, the binder is really interesting that people were collecting them and then, like, putting them in and doing all that.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't even talk about, like, how the books are bound together. You can actually take them out of the binder itself. It's, like, connected. I haven't tried to take it out because I don't really plan on it. So you can read it pretty easily if you just flip through. But yeah, you can take the little booklets out. So it's pretty nifty.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see just the recipes that some of these folks were making over time. I think that it's like kind of crazy how much work goes into quite a bit of these that most folks, I mean, little thing, kind of like sifting the flour.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people that would swear up and down, like, I will never sift my flour. Like, mm-hmm. that's not, I'm just going to pour it out. And then as long as I'm mixing it with a whisk, like, what's the difference? You know, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. And so it's interesting to see what the old standbys were or the syrup, like, the syrup. You know. but yeah, and now, oh my gosh, Biscuit has a can of tuna. He's yelling about
it. He wants to add it on his buttermilk waffles.
Yeah, we didn't make waffles, bud. We're just talking about them.
Not today. Oh my Maybe gosh. In a couple months.
I'm sorry for how rude he is being. Oh, don't.
We have an inconsiderate son.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so embarrassed. But anyway. But no, I find these books to be really interesting, and the recipe itself was really, really good. And yeah, I will play us out here with my rendition of the outro.
No.
Go ahead. Do your spiel.
I was just going to say thanks for listening. It's kind of weird for me being like in the main seat or whatever. But it is fun doing this. I like it. I like going through all these old recipes and seeing what was hip happening in the 40s, 50s, 60s, whenever. So yeah, thanks for tuning in to Retro Recipe. And I guess Devin's going to sing for us. So enjoy.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I loved coming on.
Yeah,
it was great.
Thanks for having me. Or no, sorry.
Right. Be the other way. Thank you.
Thank you for being on the show.
It's really great. I just really don't like the audience. I think it's a cat or something called Biscuit. The audience is really being rude. But yeah, I loved being on here. It's been really fun. And I don't know. Oh, here comes the band. It's a retro. It's a recipe. We're done. But you need to come and see what we're cooking on Retro Recipe.
Wow.
Ta-da!
You just came up with that off the top of your head?
Yeah.
I can't do that, so I'm pretty impressed.
I just hope the snaps come in clear.
It kind of sounded like was clapping, no, but...
Right, right. Oh. I was trying to make like a good bop.
Yeah, it was.
Thanks.
I appreciated that.
I hope it was a good bop.
Yeah, okay. So on that note, thanks.
Wow, so you thanks redid your ending to fit around my ending. Talk about a showman. Oh my gosh.
This is my segment. Okay? Okay.
You sing then.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Retro Recipe. Bye.
Goodbye, everybody. Bye. I hope you see us next time.
I want an auto-tune microphone. I'd be like, bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Okay, seriously, we're going to go now.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Ream, as a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.